My apologies, everyone. We had another microphone recording issue, which prevented my voice from coming in on the latest episode of Declarations of War. So I am doing my best to edit them out to give you a full episode. I apologize for these audio issues, and I hope to have them solved shortly.
Howdy, howdy, everyone.
Hello, guys.
Hey, hey.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for having us.
My shout-out's going to be to an Alliance member of mine by the name of Solidus Obscura. One of his many recent exploits has been flash building 100-plus cruise typhoons for us for the op that we had today, reinforcing, again, the CO2 Keepstar and MTECO. Just generally does amazing work in anything he does, and he's the best Jersey boy in MC.
My shout-out is going to the Anime Club channel in Tweetfleet Slack for helping me through a very, very long stretch of overtime at work in my sanity.
My shout-outs will be to all the lovely EVE players and to Chatulu, or Chatulu, however you want to pronounce it, because he was the first guy to help me out for my travel to FanFest.
I'm going to give a shout-out to my grandma. Today is her 80th birthday. There's zero chance that she will listen to this podcast, even if I send it to her somehow. But happy birthday, Grandma.
Sounds like a classy lady.
I think if she was an EVE player, she would be like right up there with Code, just ganking freighters all day. Oh, savage as fuck.
Not so classy after
all. Let's see. I'm going to give a shout out to my wife, because she's pretty great, and she puts up with my ass on a daily basis. And she's totally understanding when I say I have to go do crap with my space nerd friends, so she will also not listen to this at all.
So that's actually a story that I talked about a few times, not a lot. And I always think back to it with a real fun memory. And basically, at the time that I started playing EVE, I was probably around 15 years old, something like that. And we were playing as true 15-year-olds do Call of Duty with a group of friends. We were playing semi-competitively. And one day I was going on TeamSpeak and I saw some people in a different channel I joined. This was the older guys from our group. And they were playing a game called EVE. And I didn't know what it was. And they were somehow doing something that I thought was like a war. Later, it turned out to be a very simple war deck. And so I signed up using a free account. Back in the days, you still had to pay the extra fee for your administration cost, which is quite fun. And so I paid the money, and the first task I got was to basically burn over my little noob ship to a system and inform them if any of the dudes that they were fighting, undocked or did anything. So basically, my first task in EVE was to spy on another alliance, which actually still to this day is something I really love to do. So it was kind of fun to see that it all started there. Yeah, that was like you had to pay. What is your starter subscription? Is like $15, right? 10 more bucks the first month. I don't know exactly how much it was, but that used to be together with the learning skill days.
When I started up, it was still $5, actually. But that was back in 2012.
Yeah, I started in 2010. So yeah, I remember it. I don't know the amounts that it was. Maybe it was just like a $5 increase or something. I just remember, because I was young, it was a lot of money, you know what I mean? I don't know, I think I played for like 3 months, and then because I was the youngest, like by far the youngest dude in the corp, obviously older people got grumpy by the young kid doing things. So I was kicked from my corp, and obviously it felt like, my whole world suddenly like stopped. So I quit EVE, went back to World of Warcraft and Call of Duty for a few months, and returned back to EVE. And, I mean, that took a really long time. I think I quit EVE for about a year, 2 years in or something. And when I returned, the dudes that I was flying with initially, they decided that they wanted to get into NullSec. So we joined an alliance called Black Mark, which was at the time owner of Cloudring. And they were in the CFC. And that's basically where I got my first sense of war. And that's when I started checking out Evenings as well, Evenings 24. I really loved how these stories were told. And basically, that's why I started to fly more in 0.0. Sorry about that. And then after that, I think we got kicked out of the CFC. I went down to fly with Red Overlord for, I think, a year. Then I got sort of my first interactive or first conversations with PL because my corporation basically were the guys that pulled the plug on Red Overlord. We did a coup with all the Euros that was in Red Overlord, and we formed an alliance called Unclaimed, which some of you people might remember, with a glorious ticker Troll, and we took Faith of Ballas with 30 people in like a month, with maybe a bit of the help of a Pandemic Legion looking at us, like offering, I think it was Shadoo at the time still, who talked with the official leader. Snake Eyes, like, hey dudes, do you need our supers? And we were like, no, we really want to do this ourselves. And it was amazing. But yeah, that's when I got involved with PL. I applied for PL once, at probably the worst timing ever. Because I don't know if you guys remember the whole, like, the first Revenant, I think it was T20, or no. Oh, what was the dude? First Revenant, at least, that was lost by Habit. Yeah, he was like, there was a dude who was in Habit as well, which I can't remember the name of. Basically formed the fleet, asked the Revenant guy to join with him, because he had a target. Well, obviously the target didn't exist, and the Revenant had jumped in into like a fleet of enemies, which is not a place you want your brand new Revenant to be in. So he died, and well, 2 hours before that, Botman decided to apply to Habit. So obviously that, didn't work out. So I joined up with NCDOT. Met a lot of my real life friends that I still hang around with, at FanFest and stuff. And after about a year, I decided that I wanted to join up with some other buddies that I had in EVE who were in Pen and Legion. And so that's when I joined them 2 years and a few months ago. I think, like, PL is a very interesting alliance in my eyes because it's not per se the alliance that does one thing. Like, for example, you have a lot of alliances in this game or in 0.0 who, if you look at them, they are basically, the core groups of maybe they do ratting, but then they form up, for fleets. But with PL, it's much different. You have a lot of members who do their individual stuff. Like, for example, you have people that, like Wrecking Crew, or you have the Wormhole dudes, or you have people that like to fly around in low-sec, and like PL is very interesting in that way, where they have a lot of subgroups basically doing their own thing. And that's what keeps it good for PL, but it also means that for EVE, PL is a very dangerous alliance because you never really quite know, what they're doing or where they're at unless you got the contract with them. So I think it's one of the older alliances, like, actually still doing their thing for many years.
So if I could ask, what keeps all these little subgroups together? Is it like a common culture? Are you guys just so used to playing with each other you wouldn't imagine playing anywhere else? What keeps you guys keeping the status quo, as it were?
I think it's just, like, we are a very big community. If you look at, for example, FanFest or, like, other events, PL's not the biggest alliance that will be intending in terms of like alliance sizes, but they always will have the most actual people attending the event, if you know what I mean. I think it's just part of the community that we just, group up like that. And I think PL is very fair in the way, like, if for example, if I wanted to start FCing, right, and I took out some fleets and I really did well, then maybe in 3 months or something, I got more roles. I could even become a campaign commander and actually lead PL. Like, as long as you put in the work and the effort, PL, you can act as the alliance leader of PL, which is something that, really keeps things fresh. because you don't have that one leader or you don't have that one council or anything. Yeah, Pandemic Legion has always said, like, people will say Elise Randolph or Shadu or whoever are the alliance leaders of PL. It's not true. Like, we don't have one leader or Grath. Or, yes, we maybe have Elise or Grath who are known, you know, to speak on behalf of PL in certain diplomatic channels, but, you know, they're not the leaders, and we simply don't have the leaders. The group decides what we want to do, or the FCs decide what we want to do. That's the beauty. Like, Caleb and Doom Chinchilla, perfect examples of these, where, you know, they were big FCs in their corps when they left their previous alliances. They joined PL, they took the opportunity, and they are now, in very important positions within PL. But that's really what keeps things fresh. That's what PL makes, like, that's why PL can operate. The only rule we really have is that you have to get, like, a certain kill quota each 30 months. Like, if you're inactive, you obviously will get purged, so that's what keeps things fresh. Well, let's start with the current term. I think it's a bit amazing. It all started out at Season 10, where I was too young to run initially, but with the work of Sisbililu, at the time, that was changed, so I could run for Season 10. I didn't get in that time, but it really taught me a lot about how to run for the CSM, like what things to look at. You know, there was within PL, I made a slight mistake with who to ask for backing, and, you know, it was a very good learning experience. And so for running for CSM 11, I basically knew what to do roughly in order to get myself in a good position. And it was actually fun that I had the feeling that I would have a chance to get in. And that was really fun. You know, you get to talk with a lot of different people. You get a lot of new contacts in EVE that you might not get if you don't run for CSM, at least not on the way that I did. And then looking at currently, it's been amazing. Every CSM member has been really putting their best, you know, forth in talks with CCP. CCP has put in a lot of effort to talk with us, and it's been nice to see that some of the dramas that happened last year is not holding us back from working this year. Like, we both CCP and the CSM have basically admitted that we are a breath of fresh air, if you know what I mean. Like, I think CCP Mimic even called us incredibly sane. Like, she was surprised that we didn't, you know, as a joke, because CCP Guard and CCP Ledger Bro obviously took over the CSM from, you know, in terms of the CSM handlers from CCP side. And one of the things when we got in that we joked around with at FanFest was, let's make the CSM great again. And honestly, like, it's been working out like that. Let's build a wall, right? Yeah, and it's funny, like, one of the interesting things that I think we know, or at least I got to experience, was your first meeting with CCP is very interesting, because when they toss you an ID, and I don't know how Jintan looks at this, but at least that's what I experienced. You know, when they toss you an ID, you will respond as a player, which can be very, you know, direct and harsh. If you just look at Reddit, for example, you know,
I don't think so. I think we've generally been, like, way more rash. We're basically the isolating force. Mm-hmm. Like, we filter the natural response of players through some modicum of civility, because we're actual people and they have our names and know where we live.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to get to. Like, we, you know, maybe at first initially you want to respond more like a player, but then you realize that if you want to be productive as a CSM, it's not quite the way to do it. And that's where I think we applied those moderation, and even with discussions that we had within the CSM itself, like at the pub at the summit, like, yes, we didn't agree on certain topics with each other, but then we were able to agree to disagree and still work on said topic that, you know, we were talking about. It's not holding us back from actually being productive, and that's been the strongest point about this whole CSM, is that, you know, Aerith is, like, for example, a very big, you know, CFC dude. And Gorski is more the smaller player, and they, you know, they can have a sane discussion without anybody getting very frustrated. Just look at, like, Reddit or like any chat channels, like just look at player discussions. Things got heated very quickly, and we got maybe a few situations where things, you know, maybe got a bit warmer, but it always stayed, you know, civil, and people just said, okay, I don't agree with you, but hey, nice to see your point of view. I was a banker at Island ASK indeed, but I think at the time that I got into the CSM, I hadn't been an active banker for more than a year. I still had my character in there, but I didn't have access to the back end because I simply had made enough money. I was running for CSM, so I didn't have the time to do banking. So that's why I wasn't active in the periods where, I wasn't an active banker. So I can't talk about how it felt as a banker, you know, in the whole situation as in the dev blog and stuff like that. I can't say how that felt. But what I can say is when I was working at Islandisk, I personally never saw anything to do with, like, supporting R&T or anything. Like, it was talked about maybe once, and it immediately got shut down by EAP and by Iron Bank and all the other dudes. Like, it's just not a thing to do. So, I mean, people have been giving me shit for saying that sort of stuff, but it's just simply what I experienced. And till this day, I've seen some bankers that did R&T, and obviously they should be banned, but I think some, like, it's sad to see that some people worked at Islandisk or other gambling sites that, you know, did nothing wrong and just did their jobs, and then, obviously were hurt by getting their ISK removed and stuff like that. That sucks in my eyes. But yeah, so I got involved with EVE News about, like, longer than 4 years ago. Basically, I joined up. I was spying a lot in EVE. So I knew a lot of the rumors and stories, and I could confirm a lot. So me and Sir Riverini would poke me and be like, hey, Bob, have you heard about this? Can you talk anything about it? And I would confirm, deny, or do whatever with it. And slowly, I was writing so much background stories on certain rumors and stuff like that, that I was like, well, why don't I just start writing articles? And so I joined up. And then I wrote articles, I think, for about a year or a half year. I can't exactly remember. And then we got up to the first time I went to FanFest. And CCP and Evenings 24 didn't really have the great best of relationships that, you know, could be out there. Like, for example, we didn't have the fan site status. And we were kind of told that we would not be eligible for it because of certain things that happened in the past. And so I spoke with Riverini and was like, so, you know, I don't like it when people, when, you know, these things exist, or, you know, when something happened in the past and it's holding us back from actually, you know, progressing. So let me, you know, so what can I do about it? Can I maybe take over? Because Riverini was also doing a lot of real life stuff. And we talked and talked, and slowly throughout the months, I did more stuff. You know, I took over payments, and I was able to open up the conversation with CCP about, you know, the status. That was with CCP Guard, and we decided to meet at FanFest, and we had a 20 minute chat about it. And after the 20 minute chat, everything was talked about, and we were fan site status, and that's how it all started. Basically, slowly, took over EVE News from Riverini, and what was it? It's now a month ago or something. It came to an end. Yeah, I think after 4 years of, like, running a news site can be very stressful and be very hard. Obviously 4 years with people scrutinizing your articles on Reddit, you know, it takes a toll on you at some stage. And I don't think I quite burned out in that way. It was more of a, after 4 years, you know, you kind of have seen it all, and you kind of want to do something new. And I was like, you know, after one of those days where I just had enough of it, dealing with some shit, I was like, maybe it's just time for somebody else to take over. I'm doing the CSM this year. I'm planning to run next year as well. So, You know, I am already very limited with my time. I want to do certain things for evenings that I can't do at the moment, even without the CSM. Like, simply, I'm going to do an internship and stuff as well. So maybe let's give, you know, somebody else the chance to lead Eve News, and maybe, you know, that will spawn some new and amazing projects. So I spoke with Riverini about it, and he accepted it. He was very understanding. We made a few deals to hand over the keys to the castle, and Salifa and Riverini decided that Salifa and Harden would be an appropriate guy to take over. But it was really just a thing where after 4 years, I was just like, enough is enough. You want to see somebody else. Yeah, and I mean, I'm very impressed with so far how the guys have taken over. I'm still on all the channels. And I've basically been directing people that, you know, have my contact information to them. And so far, I've seen that they're handling things very well. So I think it was quite ironic that I stepped down, and in the same week, the Mitanni.com was like closed down and formed up the Imperium.news. I felt that was secretly really funny. Because they, you know, they obviously were sort of the guys to fight in terms of a media war every single day for me for 4 years. I mean, Metril is now the leader. I really like him. He was a member of my staff at some point. I've always said that I love everybody, and I love all the work and all the articles about Eve. So I'm always happy to see, you know, those sites do very well. And so far, what I've not heard a lot of negative stuff about the Imperium.news. I mean, I don't like the name, but that's just me.
So, speaking of Imperium.news, Alec mentioned when we were first going into the topic that Eve News 24 is to some a very polarizing site, possibly biased in its writers or its editorial, what have you. And certainly to others, Imperium.news or formerly the Mitanni.com is the same. When you were editor, when you were running the site, did you make an effort to try and achieve some sort of state of neutrality? Or did you go for this more polarizing view, you versus Mitanni.com?
No, definitely not. One thing I've always made very clear to everybody in my staff is that I don't care where you're from in terms of Eve playstyle. Like, I accept everybody that wants to write and can write a decent article. And that's really the guidelines I use. The problem that we had, though, for a very long time is if you apply that rule, that means that when you have more members from, like, NCDOT or Pandemic Legion or those alliances, then, you know, obviously that side of the story gets more articles, because for a long period of time, it was very hard for us and other other sites to get staff from alliances from the CFC or the Imperium, however you want to call them. It's very hard to be unbiased in the game itself in Eve, because everybody writes from their perspective as a pilot and will, you know, dislike or like a certain group. But I can say that I always did my best to, you know, if something was obviously very biased towards any side or just simply not true, I would always tell my editors to remove it. I just want to get stories out there that, you know, gets written from player perspectives, and yeah.
Cool.
I mean, I'm thinking about stuff to do. I really like what Nash has started, the Eve Kickstarter thing. I think that's really neat. It was one of the things that after the whole, you know, casino changes, a lot of defense sites were like, well, how are we going to pay for our content in the future? And this was one of the things that really could be a good step to sort of fill in the void. In terms of my own projects, I've got my YouTube channel with Bob's Corner in it. And so I am looking forward to make more videos with that. The last good video I think I made was about, me traveling to the CSM, to the CSM Summit. I'm still looking around the things that I want to pick up again. One of the things that was really cool that I got to do was be a true member of the Pandemic Legion Alliance Tournament team, which gave me a lot of insight and actually, you know, refresh some of the PvP skills a lot. So maybe I do more actual PvP content in the future. I don't know.
Yeah, I saw that tweet by my director of my corp. Basically, I've always been more of the spy guy in EVE and never really been in, like, the, you know, the fleet guy. So I already, even when I'm actively playing, I'm not the guy with the most kills on the kill board. So then add in running for CSM and being a CSM member, that pretty much, you know, removes a lot of kills as well. So we have this one rule in the MPL: if you get to the CSM, become a CSM member, you don't have to actually get any kills. You'll be allowed for your term to not get any kills. So it's always quite a funny you know, interaction that we have with each other, where he's like, go get more kills, blah, 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 blah.
Well, I think the idea sort of got started with jumping around and finally finding a home in Mercenary Coalition. A lot of people in the Alliance took kind of a liking to what we were doing in Noir Academy, the quality of pilots we were putting out. And they wanted some newer guys who maybe didn't have enough experience to jump right into a Mercenary Coalition Corp to kind of go through Noir Academy and then go to their Corp afterwards. And so that's kind of where we started with it. And then it just kind of evolved, and I sort of got this picture in my head of what it would look like on the Alliance level, Rick, rather than just a Corp within the Alliance that does it. Flash forward. CCP announces alpha clones, and all of a sudden I'm getting rage pings from Celine and Saber saying, immediately, we got to do this. Let's do this. Let's snag all these alphas. We're going to build Mercenary Academy. And that's kind of how we got here. Well, we're kind of already moving along here, but our basic structure is we have our kind of a tiered corp system. So there's a basic entry-level corp. If you apply, we click accept. It's very simple. There's no real background checks or anything like that. It's just the goal is to get bodies in. And then as you move through the corp, you do some basic training stuff. We make sure that you've got kind of like your stuff together, some basic classes like manual piloting, scouting, how E-War works, how Logi works. Once you've got those basic skills, we'll move you into the second tier where you start learning more refined stuff. One of the big changes that we're making from Noir Academy for Mercenary Academy is a lot of these guys, they're brand new to EVE entirely, right? So we want to give them kind of the whole package. So we're bringing in some of the MC guys who are better at the PVE aspects, the money making, the ISK making kind of thing. So there's, you know, a couple instructors teaching mining classes or exploration, that kind of thing.
And we have a third tier, which is the, I always forget the name, it's like the FC Corp.
Fleet Command School.
Fleet Command School, that's what it is. And that's going to be where basically the pilots learn how to be essentially skirmish FCs. So they learn how to do theory crafting, they learn how to do, you know, how to lead a successful fleet, how to do a mercenary objective properly. And those sorts of things. And that's essentially the launching off point into MC itself. You know, criteria of how you move between the different corps and, you know, what you really need to achieve before you can move on to MC proper.
Well, right now we're set up in Blackrise. We're going to be, I think we're in Ainaluri at the moment. Just kind of getting these new bros into LoSec, into faction warfare, and getting them used to a PvP lifestyle. But one of the things that our goal is to, since we're training mercenaries, we want to be mercenaries. So we're taking on contracts, going around knocking down POCOs or asset denial, that kind of thing. A kind of smaller tier than what Mercenary Coalition would do, but definitely some nomadic mercenary stuff going on.
Yeah, and we're kind of at a disadvantage, I think, with the pure alphas because we're not actually faction warfare. So there is, you know, a little bit of things that we're not able to do there for them. But we're staging two jumps from high, so there's plenty of opportunities to take two jumps and then go run a mission or, you know, that sort of stuff. Whereas those activities in MC, you know, we expect everything to be done on some sort of alt. Your MC tune, as you know, Alec, is supposed to be in the contract area and operating, doing PvP. You know, we recognize that these are new players, and obviously any new player to EVE is going to come in and go, how do I make money? How do I become self-sufficient? So we need to make those opportunities available to them, so that's definitely a big focus of ours and where we're located. I mean, I think probably the biggest reason, you know, that sets Mercenary Academy apart from all of the other new player organizations is that, you know, we're going to train you in everything, but we're going to be hyper-focused on PvP training and how to do it properly, along the same lines as what we do with Noir Academy, and we're actually going to turn players into kick-ass mercenary pilots. You know, that is the goal. It is not to get plus one, meat shield, whatever that we can throw on as a e-war wing to some MC operation that we're doing. We're literally building pilots from scratch and turning them into the people that we want next to us when they join MC. And that's really, I think, what sets us apart.
If they don't have one, I certainly do. All right, so one semi-unexpected benefit to Mercenary Academy and its truly incredible start since the Ascension release has been the reinvigoration of Mercenary Coalition proper pilots. A lot of dudes are realizing that new bros are incredibly adorable, and their spirit and enthusiasm for the game is undescribable. It you cannot compare it to anything else. And so we've had a bunch of pilots who are really, really excited to help out with Mercenary Academy. They're running fleets, they're teaching classes, they're answering questions on comms. I think we had a situation when Mercenary Academy first launched where Cassidy's alt, who was running sort of the trainer, the FC, the lecturer from MC proper, the place where they were supposed to put their characters, that fleet did not, or that corporation did not have enough character slots open for all of the people to join. There was just so much interest and people wanted to help out these new bros and enjoy the enthusiasm that ensues.
Yeah, it's really contagious being around these guys, you know, and, you know, you get a taste of what you had when you first joined EVE. And we have people that they literally start the game and that very same day they're getting into a low-sec room with us. And it's fantastic to see. And the MC guys definitely are really enjoying that interaction. And they've been amazing with stepping up as we need them to. Because that's really key, I think. If you want great MC pilots down the road, you need to develop those relationships well ahead of time. And that's the main way to do it. Because one thing I don't know if we talked about much yet is that MA operates entirely separate from MC, so literally everything is separate. And that's what allows us, from an OPSEC perspective, to, you know, bring in anyone, essentially. You just hit apply and then we accept. So having pilots that are in both, you know, and helping out is key.
That's probably a thing that we'll do down the line. Actually, I'd like to give a shout out to Pancakes, who is also in the Black Rise region with us. We reached out to them the other day and kind of did some mock skirmishes, throwing our alphas at each other. And I wasn't able to get in and see the fights going down, but I hear it was a good time, at least from my side. So I look forward to more of that in the future.
Yeah, it seems like all the fun stuff happens while I'm at work.
So as to whether or not the modules were offline yesterday, I cannot speak with certainty. However, I literally left the battle to come record this podcast with you, Alec, and I can assure you the modules are most certainly online and fully operational. Albeit, we were prepared, at least from the NC.PL/MC perspective, we were ready for it. We had anticipated the modules actually being online. An interesting thing we may talk about a little bit later in the show with Jin Tan is a special doctrine we made particularly for the occasion, but spies or no spies, today CO2 and Tess certainly put up a brawl.
Yeah, I was quite sad. I had my Titan in the PL staging, but I missed some modules, so I couldn't join up. And then, obviously, we had to do this podcast, so I was like, ah, dumb.
I mean, there was, what, 4,000, 5,000 locals, something crazy.
I think it topped out at 4,300. The really crazy thing was, it dropped. It was hilarious. So when we first found out that the modules were online, effectively for sure, was when they turned on the point defense. And what we're theorizing is the point defense killed so much crap that was just sitting around the keep star, including, mind you, quite a few test and circle of two, that the server just could not handle it. You had mass DCs, roughly a third of the MC fleet DC'd. Fortunately, we were able to get a number of them back in, but if the node weren't reinforced, then certainly the entire node would have crashed. It was insane. I did not see one. I did not hear anybody saying that they were hit by one, albeit I cannot confirm or deny for sure as my graphics were in full potato mode and I was focusing on other things the majority of the time.
I've not heard anything about them being new, so...
I was just going to say, I think if that happened, our Slack would have been exploding. Screenshots and all that stuff. But I haven't seen anything.
The final timer.
Final countdown.
The final timer will occur when, or will come out when the first reinforcement started, if I recall the mechanics correctly. So it will be Saturday, indeed.
You, perfect time for both US and EU. AU time zone people, get fucked, mates.
prepare some, like, you know, wet towels or stuff for the servers to cool down.
Yeah.
Like, they're gonna need. Run, little hamster, run.
If there's any listener who has a small corporation or perhaps is interested in coming on over solo, I'd highly recommend, it really is just a general tie-dye fest inside the system. Basically, if you're coming in as a third party, everybody's going to want to shoot you, and you're going to die that way. Maybe you'll get some dank frags out of it beforehand, but I'd highly recommend hanging out not necessarily on the Keepstar grid itself, but maybe in one of the surrounding systems or even on a celestial near the Keepstar so that you can catch anything that's trying to run away from dying on the Keepstar grid.
It's actually, I don't know if people are still doing that actually, but it was a period 2 years ago that you had smaller groups of individuals, not bombers, but just smaller corporations who would just set up for large fights like in between gates, and they would basically just bomb fleets coming in like with like their 10 dudes for fun.
Speaking of bombing,
yeah.
Shortly before I left to come record this podcast, Spectre Fleet or Bomber's Bar, I'm not entirely sure which one at this point. You know, for
sure, it was a Bomber's Bar fleet.
Bomber's Bar, props to those guys. They had an extremely successful bombing run on a pandemic horde hurricane fleet. The number that was quoted to me from a very reliable source was 116 hurricanes down, yeah. A bombing run, and the fleet of Pandemic Horde only had 160 members in it. So, well done, guys. That's impressive.
Yeah, it's looking like there were a couple of MA guys in that, so that might be some issues for me later on, but I'm looking at about 116, 100, you know, three pages of Z-Kill board, Hurricanes and Ospreys down. Say that. I did
there
say that.
There was actually a time today where more than 10% of the people who were online were in one system. Just think about that for a second.
That's pretty crazy.
10% of e-population in one system. We got so hard into tie-dye today that we encountered black screens. Black screens happened since 2010.
I wonder if Falsy is going to release some stats. Usually does it with, like, big fights.
Like trillions of ISK.
That's been fun to watch.
I think this is really what CCP was envisioning with all the new structure updates that are coming. Now, this is what they want to see. They want to see players taking control of things like trade networks and setting up our own and having, you know, this kind of new Silk Road concept, moving things between Deep Null and other places we can get to that are freeported. I think it's awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
To speak to the accusations of a Blue Donut and LoSec, I would say put yourself in the LoSec perspective. If you're a LoSec pirate organization and one of these New Eden trading company citadels has gone up in your area, what does that give you? Number one, it probably gives you a seeded market very close to home, possibly at lower prices that you've been dealing with before, so your logistics are improved. Number two, you're not the only one using that particular trading hub, which means there's going to be a lot more activity coming to your area. And number three, if none of those convince you that maybe this is a good thing, certainly pirate organizations have already begun poking at the Trade Network, Project Mayhem in particular, before the Trade Network itself was announced, decided to take a couple pot shots at the Arhun and Keepstar. Maybe they were trying to get a fight, maybe they were just testing its defenses, we don't know for sure, but these are certainly, if not directly helpful to the pirate organizations, a catalyst for content in their area. And so them allowing it, if you would consider them allowing it to exist, is not necessarily signs of a blue donut and a lack of content or fights happening around LoSec.
Seeing it's public. Well, I mean, it's very hard to reason why you want to take it away as well, because it's like, it's not really there for one alliance. Everybody can use it. So, even you can use it.
The question is, who profits from it? I think if it does ever get taken down, it's not going to be because somebody doesn't like the concept. It's going to be somebody wants to take advantage of it. And if NETC exists, then they're not going to be getting the profit.
Yeah, that's true. Jin, do you have anything special in mind? Because I have one thing.
You go ahead, dude. I'm sure.
So, after, you know, obviously we all know that this big expansion was just released with a lot of stuff. And I'm quite looking forward to hear what people are thinking for maybe, you know, the future. So if you have any ideas or wishes, something that we could add to our list of things to discuss, feel free to let me know. I think it's been very helpful to get ideas from the community and you know, see what they, you know, what we can work on with CCP to improve. If you feel that if you have a great idea about it, just let me know, and I can steal it and use it in the CCP meetings that we have. Yeah, I think those kind of projects, you know, they get now possibly more time for it to be developed. I don't know, like, just general these kinds of projects, right? Because, you know, the Citadel expansion and stuff took up a lot of resources, I would say. So, you know, we're just looking at, you know, what next to discuss again, and hopefully we can actually bring those projects to life again, things as well. Like, for example, there was a thing that they made with where you could actually drop a beacon in space that would, like, broadcast your advertise your stuff, which would be awesome if we could get that in the game one day.
Yeah, can I just get ad block for my Citadel, though? Like, come on now.
Well, that was one of the things that they talked about, basically, where you could, like, if you're, you know, in your Citadel, you could decide.
We did actually have a cool conversation about the pub, about the future of potentially those advertising things, how they might change over time. Yeah, like that's a bit more pie in the sky stuff than guaranteed stuff, guaranteed things.
I think. Because of just this, at least personally, that's what I believe. After such big expansion, there is room for that sort of stuff. So that's why I'm very intrigued to see what people come up with.
Cool. We can't talk anything about future structures. We'll be bringing up current structures in the next CSM summit, which will be in January. Obviously, if you guys want to start talking to us about, you know, things that you think haven't been discussed yet in the CSM tour, you know, starting to contact some things like that, please. We actually brought that up, but they don't have the technology, unfortunately. The only thing close to that is the Palantine, which is effectively just a skin.
Can we get a final word on what the big thing was that Fozzy tweeted about?
Fozzy,
and nobody has quite
tell us.
No,
oh, really?
Yeah.
I was the guy who asked Fozzy, so are you going to tell us? He's like, no.
Absolutely. You know I'm not going to tell you. In that order. Like, just enough to tease Bob before telling him no.
Yeah, like, that's the best part, like, sometimes working with these guys is that, you know, some of us know these devs for a longer time, so we, you know, you get to troll each other as well.
Yeah.
And, like, we have not even a clue about which kind of topic it is. Like, he won't say a thing, so it's like, we can't even guess, if you know what I mean.
I'd actually like to put another thing out. If you have just a lot more complaining about the CSM lately, I've just been arguing with Jester Trek in a Reddit thread. I don't know why. Arguing with Jester Trek is like trying to break down a brick wall by shouting at it. But if you guys do think of ways that we don't communicate that, you know, aren't going to take us 10 hours a week, like, let us know. We're always interested in talking to you guys. It's just a matter of how the fuck do you want to talk to us.
Yeah, and that's actually a very good part, good thing to bring up, because for most of us, you know, it's our first term. So, you know, we don't have everything set in stone yet in terms of what the best way is to do things. So if you have any good ideas, let us know. I think, in general, the best place to be is the TweetFeed Slack. I think that's where most of us are at. But you could, like, mailing us in game also works very well. Like, we see a ton of emails. If you want to have, like, a debate or a chat, just poke us on Slack or Twitter. That's the two places that use mostly.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much. I pretty much just agree with Bobman here.
And don't be afraid to contact us. That's something I said at Peace Slam as well. It's like, you know,
I respond to most of my mails the day they get to me.
It's actually, I don't know, like, if it's a good thing to say, but it's been funny to me that, you know, when CSM 10 was running and we were running, there was a lot of talks about the CSM, and as soon as we really got in, there was not. But that also was because there was no drama or anything like that. But it was just funny. Like, honestly, don't be afraid to contact us, even if you wanna do a podcast or stuff like that.
Yeah, so my host highlight is going to be LCing. For those who don't know, that means logic commanding for larger fleets. The logistics have to anchor themselves separately from the DPS, do some very special things to ensure they stay alive and do their job properly. And to do that effectively, usually you appoint one individual as the logi commander to sort of have all the other logis anchor on him. He communicates with the FC, lets them know what's going on, and also lets his logistics bros know what's expected of them at any given time. And in this particular fleet, it was under a fantastic fleet commander in MC. We were out in Brave Space. Actually, it was just pure blind. We were roaming around, and Scourge decided to come out in their typical nano gang, except they had quite a few battleships, a Mercurial, a Nightmare, and then your standard Orthrus, Omen Navy issues, things like that. Brutix Navy issues as well. But effectively, it was a roaming skirmish. It was just bouncing from place to place mid-system. Really, really difficult to anchor for. Everything was moving incredibly fast, and there was a lot of spatial calculations to do in the back of my mind as far as where I needed to be. It was incredibly fun. I got the PvP shakes for the first time in a while, so great thanks to Scourge Dot. They're a new up-and-coming Russian group, if I recall correctly. So, great guys. I enjoyed fighting you. Looking forward to it in the future.
My host highlight is absolutely definitely getting to commentate the RVB Tyrian Cup. I'll probably try and find a video link to give to Alexia. But I got brought in and I got to commentate one of the final matches, and it was a super exciting format, like 5v5 points based, kind of like the AT, but a lot more kind of relaxed, a lot more fun combat. And every match, it felt like went so close. Everyone was in it at all times. Oh, it was probably some of the most fun watching that I've, you know, fun stuff that I've ever got to watch in my time in EVE. And I also have another little highlight, which I actually have on video. I think one of my court mates is working to put it together into a slightly edited format, where me and my court mates went out in remote rep battleships, living the dream as usual, into some Russian space. We got dumpstered initially, but then two or three of us managed to pull together on the other side of a gate and massacred like 20, 30 sabers before eventually dying to make our ships back. It was really fun.
So my highlight would be of this week is that I've collected a few AT ships, and I was using my Cambion. And we knew that people were hunting our AT ships, but the guy that we knew was hunting us was not a local, so I decided, let's use it to kill this one frigate, get into the site, and suddenly 10 dudes jump into local. And I click on these again, and they're indeed warping to a place that I was at, or I thought they would, and I managed to escape, thankfully. Yeah, that was quite the moment this week. Another highlight that I didn't put on the list, but I want to say, is that I decided I want to run for season 12 as well. So yeah. Of course.
So my big highlight is we've been running, well, I guess since it's a week highlight, we've been running MA and things are still not on fire, which is kind of an accomplishment in and of itself. I'm new to this Alliance leader thing, so there's all this stuff that crops up. Other than that, I would say I got my first experience running Lynx in our traditional Breakfast Club fleet. I ran a Bifrost with some Lynx, the new on-grid Lynx, and it was kind of an interesting experience from the normal role that I've played as a command destroyer before. So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, so mine's also Mercenary Academy related. So Cassie was actually running one of our PvP classes the other day, and he had to bail. So he was like, "Can anyone take out a fleet?" And I was like, "Well, I'm available. Sure, why not?" So we took out the fleet, and then we found nothing basically for like an hour. And as we were coming back, we just randomly saw a Stratios sitting in a large complex, and so we're in, you know, these little T1 shield frigates. And so we just, like, send someone that got tackle, and we all went in and blapped the thing. I don't know if the guy was AFK, you know, plexing or what have you, but it was really cool to just have, like, 10 T1 frigates kill this, you know, 260 mil or whatever Stratios. And some of the bros, it was their first fleet, and they had a blast, so that was great.
The first thing that we are going to be covering is escalation theory, which is something that I love talking about because it's so invisible to people who don't understand it, but once you do understand it, you will suddenly realize why so many actions take place the way they do.
I know I will be listening.
Oh, thanks, Bob. Man.
Yeah. We got four.
Two people dropped. Cypher has to go see his wife, and Artemis has just gotten RL pinged to his job. So. Okay. For those who don't know, King Carnage is one of the Renegade Emperors, was a Renegade member of the Imperial Court, who, after failing the succession trials, decided to abscond with his region, leading to this wonderful transition. "I will not be ordered by some whimpering fool to destroy myself, for my work is unfinished. You will not take anything from me. Not my kingdom, not my people, and least of all my life." Carnet the Second. He's alive. Got killed by the Ascension Trials. Yeah, well, they were still, until, I think, recently under the rule of King Carnet. He exercised control over that region, orchestrated why they are covered by the Carnid police and not the Amar faction police. I'm going to be corrected by a ton of Amarian roleplayers now because I'm not 100% sure on that. Rip me.
So if you don't mind, I'd like to sort of adopt my mercenary commandant persona with this reading of J7H7 TAC F. Children? Children. Adults are talking. Leave us be.
You put some style on it too for the Alliance tournament, and also they do definitely exist. You can potentially get there someday. We hope. Maybe.
Maybe that's the thing. Used to be Fuzzy said, "Run."
Yeah. Even before that, I remember people using deep space probes to get there.
I heard that if you're in Cheetah and you spin 3,000 times right and then left, you get that too. So I'll be doing Kador. Here, how is known as the old imperial family. Kador is one of the least developed regions in the Empire. The Kador family has not been progressive in encouraging trade and investments onto the region, favoring older, established holder families with proven bloodlines and heritage. Though in many ways a musty embodiment of old ways, Kador may be one of the few parts of Amar territory where a traveler can still get a glimpse of the grand and majestic empire of days gone by.
Fuck you. You guys seen that for Twitter, by the way? It's so good.
I mean, for a long period of time.
We also have Providence Pence, and yep. Providence Corbin, and Providence Sanders, and I've just been having a ball watching it happen. Providence Corbin, who is a politician in England.
And then Pravi Mike Pence.
Yeah, so good. So into role-playing that we met a role-play as politicians.
Just coming back on the previous discussion we had, I just found a screenshot posted by Celine that indeed the Citadel Doomsday was firing on a bunch of Dreadnoughts of Darkness. Looks actually pretty amazing.
That's pretty fucking cool. Fly smart.
What's really to stop them? Oh, I assume that Maybe someday my mother would realize that I should have gotten out. No, she was nice. No, she would have known. But still, what's to stop them? And finally, they called.